Hi, thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for giving me an opportunity to talk here. And I'm Yuki Nagai from Japan Atomic Energy Agency. I'm also visiting researcher in Riken AIP. Today I'd like to talk about the non-Hermitian physics in strongly correlated systems. And I want to note that we do not consider the non-equilibrium state. We do consider the equilibrium state. So, So first I'd like to show the collaborators and Lian Fu's group in MIT and Yan Qi in Fudan University. Is there Lian here or not coming? Because I was a 1 year visiting researcher in MIT, so this project started Feng Yang and I were in MIT. So this is outline. First I will show the non-Hermitian topological theory to consider the strongly correlated systems with finite temperature. And with use of this theory, topological theory, we show that the heavy Fermi systems can have the bulk Fermi arc, which is similar to the cuprates. And finally, the summary is given. And we wrote the paper and we submitted it. But near future, I think you can see the paper. But I don't know. Anyway, and first I will show the non-Hermitian topological theory. And the important point is that the non-Hermitian Hamiltonian means the sum of the one particle Hamiltonian and the self energy. Okay. So first, as you know, there are many theories about condensed matter physics, and the important theory is the band theory, of course. And in this theory, we usually solve the Schrödinger equations, and the solids, of course, have the periodic potential, so we use the Brock wave functions. And with solving the Schrödinger equation, of course, we have some eigenvalues. And with use of the eigenvalues, we can distinguish whether the material is metal or insulator, like this. So the eigenvalue is very important to distinguish materials. Recently, in recent decades, there is, of course, the topological band theory. In this case, of course, we solve the eigenvalue equation, I mean the Schrödinger equations. And for example, in the case of the topological insulator, with the use of the wave function, we can define the Berry connection, which was shown in previous speaker. And with use of this Berry connection, we can define the Chern number, first-time Chern number. And in this case, we use the wave function. So I regard this cat as a wave function. Then in momentum space, if the cat is rotating like this, then Chern number is 1. And if the cat is not rotating in momentum space, this is a topologically trivial state. So the wave function is very important to distinguish topology in solid states. And also we can have some another method to distinguish topology. The Green function is very important because we can calculate the physical observables with the use of the Green function. The Green function is defined by this one. And for operator A and B, for example, we can calculate the density of states, of course, which is measured by some experiments. And with use of the Green function defined by this form, this is a one particle Green function, psi and psi dagger. Psi dagger is annihilation and creation operator. And also, we can calculate the Chern number with the use of the Green function, like this. So we do not need to know wave functions to calculate physical observables and the topology. So the Green function is very important because if we consider the material, of course there is some temperature. But quantum mechanics does not have temperature. So we have to consider the statistical mechanics. Then we can introduce the temperature. So the Green function can be defined in finite temperatures. So with the use of the Green function, we can have some topology in finite temperature. So there might be some new topological theory with the use of the Green function. Okay. For example, there are interacting phenomena in correlated electron systems. We show two cases, and one is Fermi arc in cuprates, and this is a zero energy spectral function in momentum space. We can have some disconnected Fermi surface. And in these materials, which is called condom insulators, in these cases, there are Fermi surface. But these are insulators, so there is some puzzle. So I think there might be topology in correlated electron systems. which might explain these phenomena. So we used the Green's function to determine the topology in correlated systems. But first of all, I will focus on the non-interacting systems. And the Hamiltonian is this one. H naught is one particle Hamiltonian. And of course, we can solve the Schrödinger equation like this. And one particle Green function is defined by this form, omega minus H naught, the inverse of this. And we can have poles. We can find poles at the point where the determinant of this matrix is zero. And these poles are, of course, at the omega equals the eigenvalue of these Schrödinger equations. So, and of course, this Hamiltonian is Hermitian, then poles are on real axis. And this is an imaginary part of the Green function, and this means that this function is the sum of the delta functions because the poles are on the real axis. But what happens in interacting systems? In interacting systems, we consider the H naught plus HI. HI is the interaction Hamiltonian, for example, which includes electron-electron interaction or electron-phonon interaction. Then we can have some one particle Green's function, which is defined by the determinant of this matrix, omega minus H naught minus the self energy. The self energy is, of course, have the energy dependence. Then we can obtain the poles with solving and finding the zero of the determinant, this one. But of course, this has some energy dependence. So now, for simplicity, we assume that the self energy does not depend on the energy. So now the self energy is constant. Then we can have some poles to solve this matrix. Then we can define the effective Hamiltonian, H effective, which is the sum of the H naught plus the self energy. In this case, what is the difference between the non-interacting system and the interacting systems? The difference is that the poles are on complex plane in this case, because this Hamiltonian, of course, this is not exact Hamiltonian. This is just a Hamiltonian. But this eigenvalue is a complex, which means that the poles are on complex plane. So of course, we can define some Schrödinger equation with use of H effective. So and it's important because in finite temperature, there is some self-energy, even with interacting systems. So the Green function is defined by this form, omega minus H effective. This is just a definition. I mean that H effective is the sum of the H naught plus the self-energy. This is one particle Hamiltonian, so Bloch Hamiltonian, and this is the self-energy. So this quasi-particle Hamiltonian, of course, is not exact Hamiltonian, but this is just effective Hamiltonian, but we can discuss the non-Hermitian physics. Because the self-energy is a non-Hermitian. Because there is a finite lifetime in correlated electron systems, so the diagonal part, the self-energy has an imaginary part in diagonal elements. This means that this matrix is a non-Hermitian. So this effective Hamiltonian is also non-Hermitian. And the poles of the Green function in complex plane is very important because this determines the quasi-particle properties. For example, the real part of this is the quasi-particle dispersion, and the imaginary part of the eigenvalue means the inverse lifetime. But in single band system, it's not so interesting because the eigenvalue is the sum of the epsilon k and gamma k. Epsilon k is the dispersion of the H naught, one particle Hamiltonian, and this is the inverse lifetime. But if we consider the multi-orbital systems, H naught and sigma are matrices, which means that there is some interesting effect because H naught and sigma generally do not commute because these are matrices. So this means that if there is some lifetime finite lifetime effect, then the dispersion is altered. Okay, so if there is some quasi-particle interactions, this means that the dispersion is changed. For example, now we consider the 2D system with linear dispersion. I mean that there are Dirac cones in momentum space. And we consider this 2x2 matrix, so epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 is a band. And we consider now there are two different effective mass, so light band and heavy band. Then there is some hybridization effect, VK. And near Dirac-Cohn, and in this model, we can have some 2x2 matrix. And we also consider the self-energy, like this, gamma 1 and gamma 2. This is the inverse lifetime of the quasar particles. Now we consider the light band and heavy band, which means that the inverse is, lifetime is different. But if we consider the graphene system, of course there is some chiral, there is a chiral symmetry, which means that this should be same. But if we consider some light and heavy band system, we can have different lifetimes. And this occurs in the case of the heavy fermion system because there are, of course, the heavy F band and the light C conduction band. Then we can define the quasi-particle Hamiltonian, this one, 2x2 matrix, and this is an imaginary part of the Hamiltonian, so we can have some complex eigenvalues. Then with diagonalizing this 2x2 matrix, we can have the eigenvalues. Then, as I said, this model has Dirac-Cohn, but with introducing this gamma 1 and gamma 2, then we can have the splitting of the Dirac-Cohn like this. This is a real part of the eigenvalues. But the important point is that if gamma 1 and gamma 2 is same, then there is no splitting. So this difference is very important. Okay. As I said, this is a 2x2 matrix, and the complex spectrum is written by here. But the important point is that the VK hybridization, of course, depends on the momentum. For example, we fix now kx equal to 0, then the real part of the energy is like this. So there are two regions. At the origin, there is a Dirac-Cohn in this model. Then, of course, VK depends on the momentum, ky. So if we consider this region, which means that VK is larger than gamma. Gamma is the difference between these two lifetimes, inverse lifetimes. Then this value has a real value. I mean that the real part of the E plus is not equal to real part of the E minus. So this means that the gap opens like this. But if the hybridization is smaller than the gamma, which means that this value, for example, we consider this epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 is 0 at the Fermi level, then this becomes Vk square minus gamma square. This means that this can be negative. So this means that this value, the real part of this value is 0, because this is pure imaginary. Then there is no difference between the E plus and E minus. I mean the real part of this, which means that the gap closes here. So this is a level sticking instead of repulsion. Usually, if we consider the multi-orbital system, of course, there is some repulsion. But in this case, the level is sticking. And we can, of course, determine the topological index. As I said, this is a 2x2 matrix, and this is a complex energy. And if we consider the region that this value is 0, which means that ky is equal to gamma over vy in this case, then there is only one single eigenstate. In Hamiltonian systems, of course, there are two eigenstates because this is a 2x2 matrix. But this is a non-Hamiltonian matrix, which means that the rank reduces at some point. So at this point, we can only have a single eigenstate. So this is a singularity point. So we can define the topological index. And in previous slide, I regard the cat as an eigenfunction, but in this case, we regard this cat as a complex energy. And the energy is complex, so which means that we can define some rotation. So if the cat is rotating around the singularity point, I mean the exceptional point, then we can have some finite topological index like this. So we can define the topology in the strongly correlated systems. And at the end of the nodal arc, it's interesting. This is called usually exceptional point in mathematical literature. This is a 2x2 matrix. And at the exceptional point, this matrix becomes this one. There are only gamuts. Then the green function is like this. So there is only one pole, which means that this is a future of non-Hamiltonian operator. Because in Hamiltonian systems, as I said, there are, of course, usually always there are two eigenstates. So there are always two poles if the self-energy does not depend on the energy. So two poles of Green function merged into one in this case. Okay, but I think that some people think about that there is energy dependence in real materials. So I mean that the self-energy usually has energy dependence. First, so we consider the linear dependent case. So what happens? One particle Green function is defined by this one. This is same, and there is a self-energy. And of course, we have to find the poles, position of poles here. So now we assume that the self-energy has some energy dependence, linear dependence. Of course, we can define the effective Hamiltonian because we can easily transform this to this one. Then we can have some effective Hamiltonian like this. So this means that even with the linear dependence of the energy, we can define the effective non-Hermitian Hamiltonian. So this is, and if we consider the two orbital models or multi-orbital system, this sigma is a matrix. So sigma 1 is also matrix. So inverse of this one is matrix. So which means that there is some orbital dependent effect. So for example, in this paper, they consider the disordered two-dimensional Dirac model. Then with increasing some disorders, then the dispersion changes like this. And this has the orbital dependence like this. Okay. And we also consider the polynomial expansion of the energy, this one. The same energy is the sum of some power loads of the frequencies, energy. Then, of course, we have to find the pole of this one. And I showed some old paper, 1971. And in this paper, this is called lambda matrix problem. Then this paper says that this finding this pole means solving the generalized eigenvalue problem, this one. The important point is that there are many omegas here, but in this matrix, there is only one omega, which means that this is a linear equation. But this is not a simple eigenvalue equation. This is a generalized eigenvalue problem, whose matrix is shown here. So the size of the matrix is increases. So for example, this is a polynomial expansion. So and this is called a companion matrix. So size of the, for example, if D equals 2, then the size is double compared to the original Hamiltonian. Then with solving the general eigenvalue problem, we can have some poles, eigenvalues. So we can have poles. So this is an effective Hamiltonian. So there is, might be topology for generalized eigenvalue problem. This is an, I think this is new, but I just found, so I don't know, have any idea. So if you have some idea, please tell me. Anyway, so now we consider the origin of the two lifetimes. There are two mechanisms, electron-phonon interaction and electron-electron interactions. Electron-phonon interaction is discussed in this paper. And the electron-electron interaction is discussed in this talk, and also in this paper. And in this paper, this talk, we consider the periodic Anderson model because we want to consider the heavy fermion systems. And this model, there are two orbitals, heavy F-band and light conduction band, and there is some hybridization, and this is electron-electron interaction. And the heavy F-electron is very heavy, so there is only F-electron-F-electron interaction. And I want to show the talk and related poster shown by the Matsushita-san. At this talk, we discussed the Fermi arc in heavy fermion system. And in related poster, they discussed the disorder induced wild exceptional ring and spectral collapse of random levels in wild semi-metal. This is the title of the poster. And in this poster, they discuss non-Hermitian phenomena in disordered wild semi-metals. The important point is that I think that this is a three-dimensional system. So usually, this exceptional ring or some non-Hermitian physics is discussed in two-dimensional system. But in three-dimensional system, there is some interesting effect. So if you're interested in, please go to this poster. Anyway, With the use of the topological band theory, so this theory can explain the insulated film surface. But there is not my name, so it's not my work, so I show briefly. And this means that if we consider the damping effect, there is some metal-like Landau levels, then there is some quantum oscillations. So this is called non-Hermitian Landau level. So now I will talk about the heavy fermion systems. Now we consider the Condorcet metal. Condorcet metal is a Condor insulator with a momentum-dependent hybridization gap. And in this model, there are four Dirac cones like this in momentum space. And as I said, we use the periodic Anderson model. So there is a C electron and F electron. And we consider now flat band. And we consider the hybridization, which has the D wave momentum dependence like this. So we consider the light band and the heavy band. And with introducing the interacting effect, what happens? First, we consider the self energy by hand. The quasi particle complex energy is like this. And this is a 2-byte Hamiltonian, so this is very similar to the previous case. And the spectral function is like this, but it's complicated, so now we focus on the line here. Then the complex energy becomes like this. So this is very similar to the previous case. So this means that in momentum space, there are exceptional points. So where are exceptional points in momentum space? And the answer is near Dirac cones. So now we introduce the quasi-particle lifetime by hand. So this is a Condor insulator case. There is no momentum dependence. And this is a Condorcet metal case. There is a momentum dependence of the hybridization gap. And this is a weak interacting case, and this is a strong interacting case. Now we introduced the inverse lifetime by hand. And this is a spectrum function, as a function of the momentum, and so it's hard to see, maybe, but at near Dirac cone, there is some peak spectrum function. Spectrum function has peak. And far from the Dirac cone, there is a deep structure, which means that this is like a Fermi arc, which is similar to the cuprates. So to confirm this numerically, we use the dynamical mean field theory with continuous time quantum Monte Carlo impurity solver. This means, and now we solve this model, which means that there is some temperature dependence. So the self energy depends on temperature, which means that the bulk Fermi arc depends on temperature. So we can see the temperature dependence of the self energy with solving this periodic Anderson model by the dynamical mean field theory, DMFT. So this is the result. So this is a temperature dependence. So the left one is a lowest temperature case, and the right one is the highest temperature case. So we can clearly see that at near Dirac cone, there is some peak structure. This is a spectral function as a function of the energy. So there is a peak structure. At far from Dirac cone, there is a deep structure. With increasing temperature, in this case, and these three have all peak structure, which means that the length of the Fermi arc changes with changing temperature. And I want to show the energy and the momentum dependence of the spectral function. This is a zero energy spectral function, which is measured by Alves. And this red, green, orange means that this is the difference of the positions here. It's hard to see, even for me. And in that case, this is far from Dirac cone. Then there is some gap structure here. And in orange case, and this is very close to Dirac cone, then there is some linear dispersion. So this is a Fermi arc in cuprates, which is similar to cuprates. Then I want to explain this with use of exception points. In 2D Dirac model, the eigenvalue is this one. So kx and ky and gamma. Then there are exception points at this point, which means that if this value becomes zero, there is an exception point. So and there are two exception points in this model. And between these two, there is intensities. Because this value it becomes negative. So the square root is pure imaginary, which means that the real part of the eigenvalue is zero. So there is some zero energy intensity. In the case of the periodic Anderson model, of course, the eigenvalue is complex, but we can use some M and V, like this. V is hybridization. Then we can consider the we can consider the this space, VK and MK space, and this is very similar to this one. So we can see that there is some intensity between these two. So and we also consider the temperature dependence of the accession point. At zero temperature, there is no accession point. So there is a Dirac cone. And with increasing temperature, the Dirac cone, accession point moves like this. So and this means that in experiment, we might see the temperature dependence of the Fermi arc in condensed metal. And I would want to explain this without using topology. In condo insulator, at zero temperature, of course, this is insulating, so there is no intensity at zero energy. But if we consider the high temperature, this is a metallic state, so we can have some Fermi surface-like structure. In condensed metal, the hybridization depends on the momentum, which means that near the cone, the hybridization is very small, which means that this is like a high temperature region in condo insulator. But at the point far from the Dirac cone, this means that this is like a low temperature region, which means that there is no intensity. So, of course, in high temperature limit, this is same, but in intermediate region, there is some Fermi arc. So we can explain this without using topology. And now there is some candidate. I did not calculate anything, but now serine nickel tin is a condensed metal, and there is some paper. So we might see the Fermi arc in this system, but we did not calculate. So this is summary. And now we introduced the new topological theory. And in this theory, we introduced non-Hermitian effective Hamiltonian, which is not exact Hamiltonian. And with the use of this, we can predict that the condensed metal can have a bulk Fermi arc. And with use of this theory, we can discuss the topology in finite temperature in strongly correlated systems. Thank you for your attention.
Nice talk. Yeah, we have a question in the back from George. Just wait for the microphone.
In your last DMFT calculation, so this damping parameters gamma, say we are like phenomenological parameters or?
I calculated the self energy and we calculate the gamma.
So the point is that, you know, like you mentioned the frequency dependence.
Yes.
But as soon as I approach, Fermi energy, it should be a strong frequency or energy dependence or momentum dependence of gamma because of, the basic foundation of Landau-Fermi liquid theory. So depending on dimension, it goes to zero with some power. So does it stay finite in your case?
Sorry, what?
Is gamma finite in your case?
Yes, because now we consider the finite temperature. At zero temperature, this goes to zero. So,
I see.
Yeah. This strongly depends on the temperature. So, Fermi leakage theory, I think this should be zero at zero temperature, I think. Right?
Yeah, it should be zero, otherwise, you don't have a quasi particle.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but you still see the effect. So, all these effects are finite temperature driven.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if there is at some level, part of the effect that you're seeing is broadening, or the part of the things that self-energy does is broadening.
Yeah.
Is there a smoking gun way to experimentally, like just looking at the figures to tell the difference between, I guess maybe if we go back to the figures of these, for example. Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but it's like two peaks come together and cross at that point, and then, two broadened peaks come together and cross, right? That's what those. But this I guess I'm wondering if there is a smoking gun way to tell the difference between two broadened lines crossing versus this exceptional point physics going on.
Yes, and yeah, broadening, I think the broadening does not depend on the band. I mean that's, okay, so there are two contributions. One is the orbital independent and smearing effect, and there is, of course, the orbital dependent smearing effect. And the extension point means that there is a orbital dependent smearing effect. So, I see, where is the eigenvalues? Yeah, so this term is an orbital independent effect, so this is smearing. So, so yeah.
No, so I'm asking more from an empirical standpoint. If you don't have access to the theory of the material,
yeah.
Then can I look at the figures that tell the difference?
I see. Oh, okay, so of course, this is Dirac-Cohn, which means that the excitation is very isotropic, right? Dirac-Cohn. Yeah, but this is a very strong, there is strong anisotropy. This one. Usually, if we consider the damping or some lifetime effect, this is this like circular. But in this case, this is like this. Okay, so there should be strong anisotropy because this depends on the orbital. Okay.
Andre.
Have you yourself or anybody else tried to look at the structure of this non-Hermitian Hamiltonian in Matsubara frequency language?
Uh-huh.
The point being there is that self-energy is always a function of omega n and has to have a branch cut.
Yeah.
Right. So it always changes sign as you go positive versus negative frequencies. Does this change the formalism? And if so, would you still expect to see the exceptional points?
You mean that in the imaginary axis? You mean that?
Well, so for instance, CTQMC was done technically on a Matsubara axis, and
yes,
this is
yes.
presumably folded back, or not folded, yeah. but analytically continued on
yeah,
the real
exactly.
frequencies.
Yeah.
My question is whether one could try, I don't know, maybe you or somebody else who already did, did people try implement the idea of this non-Hermitian Hamiltonians by expressing self-energy in Matsubara frequency language?
Oh, let's see. Yeah, we can discuss the non-Hermitian Hamiltonian, of course, on the imaginary time axis, but there is no pole on the imaginary time axis. Imaginary axis, right? Okay, so the Green function is defined by its complex plane, so we can always discuss the non-Hermitian physics,
exactly.
but the pole is usually near real axis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so which means that, yeah, there is some, of course, there's some contribution, but I think this is coming from some real axis properties, so.
Right, but the point is that the final answer should be the same in the end of the day, whether you formulate it in Matsubara
yes,
or the real
yes.
frequency.
Yeah.
And so I guess my question is, how do those exceptional points manifest themselves if you did an equivalent calculation but stuck to the Matsubara frequencies? In the end, any observable you compute, like the spectral function, should not depend how you got there.
I see. So I think, for example, we can distinguish a metal or an insulator with using Matsubara frequency Green function, right? So this means that we can also discuss the non-Hermitian physics, I mean the exception point, with use of the Matsubara frequency Green function. So
but your knowledge it hasn't been done.
I didn't do that, so I don't know the exact answer, but yeah.
I think I have a little bit of a related question. But maybe more general somehow. I mean, Back in the day, I was taught, very important consequences for equilibrium Green's functions, follow from unitarity, and they're expressed in the spectral representation, and that's supposed to tell me that the Green's functions basically only have singularities on the real axis, not necessarily poles. They turn into branch cuts or other things. I thought that they're basically supposed to be analytic. Now, you construct some object which is not the entire Green's function because you sort of pull off some omega and you define the rest to be something else. And in that way, maybe you construct some objects that have extra singularities in them. There are constraints on the self-energy, for example, to satisfy the unitarity constraints
yes,
on
yes.
the Green's function.
Yes.
How important are those constraints? how important is it how you break up the Green's function? Mm-hmm. You, I guess you define the Hamiltonian by subtracting the omega. Mm-hmm. But you know, maybe you should subtract a z omega or something else. Mm-hmm. That's it. Comments.
Okay, so yeah. Yeah, this is just a definition. So as you said, yeah, this is definition. Of course, there is some constraint, but yeah. But now just we consider the this is. I mean, this regard as Hamiltonian. I mean, that's a matrix. So yeah. For example, yeah, there is some. Okay. For example, and the small gamma. I think there are two gammas, large and small gamma. I mean, the difference and the sum of the two gammas. Of course, there is some constraint. So which means that there is some limit of the value, but this is not so important. I mean, in terms of this talk, so yeah. But I don't know. Sorry. Yeah.
But just two constant gammas with some inequality constraint is enough to fully satisfy the analyticity requirements in the full complex plane for the Green's function.
Sorry, what do you mean?
Well, as Andre was saying, you know, fermion Green's function is always an even function of frequency,
yes.
For example.
Yes.
Bosonic one is an odd
yeah.
one. These various things, they usually some requirement, how
yeah.
it behaves at large frequency.
Mm-hmm.
These things, are they satisfied with these, you know, kind of ad hoc assumptions for the self-energy?
Sorry, I don't understand the question, but how to say? And yeah, of course, there is some structure of the Green function, which means that, for example, now I said that there is some higher order polynomial expansion. Where is the? Oh wait, yeah. Then I mean that the first order should be zero, or the first order of the real part is zero, one, I think. I don't know, but there is some constraint in this, and even in the Matsubara frequency axis. I mean that. This is a coefficient of the self-energy, so the all constraint is included in this coefficient, I think. And so I don't understand that's the question. But.
Okay, we can discuss. Yeah, there's another question back here.
Hi. So you mentioned about exceptional point
yeah.
and having only a single eigenstate.
Yeah.
Then what happens to the Hilbert space?
Sorry?
Like, what happens to the Hilbert space in this case? Because you're supposed to have like two states, but now you have only one eigenstate.
Yeah.
So what happens to the other state?
You mean that at the exception point?
Yeah.
Yeah. So rank of the matrix reduces at this point. So I think that, for example, now we have two eigenstates. So I think that component becomes equivalent. I mean, to go to the.
You can still think about the state like, perpendicular to the eigenstate.
Yeah.
Like, so what's the physical meaning of that, the other state?
Other state, yeah.
I mean, because in principle, you can construct such a physical state, which is not the eigenstate, but still something perpendicular to the eigenstate, the exceptional point.
I don't think so, because the rank of the matrix is 1 in this case. This means that there is only characteristic eigenfunction. There is only 1. Of course, we can so this is not a degenerate case, so there is only 1.
Yeah,
which means that if we have some two different eigenfunction, but with some changing, then this should be same. Okay, because the rank is 1. So. Is this the answer? Well, I don't know.
I think we can talk later.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, I think we reached the end of our question time, so let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you.